Is going to be Amber Bullock. She is Executive Vice President of Program Development for Legacy, and she also happens to be an ATOD section counselor, and some of you may recognize her name because she's also our Fund Development Chair. Take it away.
Good morning. You know, we've been in the last presentation, Carla has pointed very well to what's going on the state and local level. But there's also an evolution of change on the national level, and that impacts all of you also. And so today, I'm going to explore a little bit more about our ever-evolving landscape with respect to regulation. And first of all, I want to give a shout-out and a thank you to the team who helped put this slide presentation together. Stacey Gregosian, she's in the audience, and also Ellen Vargas, our legal counsel back at Legacy, and Adria Bidalani, she was also very instrumental. So thank you, ladies. And I have nothing to disclose. I think Cynthia wants me to disclose something, though. Okay, as you know, the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act, I'm going to refer to that as the Tobacco Control Act, was passed in June of 2009. So we've had it with us now a little over 2 years. Due to stipulations of the Master Settlement Agreement, many of you know that Legacy cannot take positions on legislation. So we did not take any positions on the legislation at that time prior to it becoming the Tobacco Control Act, nor did we play any role in the passage of that legislation. However, now that it is law, we do and we take a role in its implementation. Further, there are a lot of opportunities for researchers and activists and states and communities to get involved in the implementation as well. So today what I'm going to cover is the basic regulatory process, kind of a basic 101. I'll go over key terms associated with the process. We're going to explore the importance of public participation and what that means, and encourage you to also get involved. I'll continually do that. And I'm going to use two specific case examples of how Legacy got involved in with these points. Now here on this slide, we try to point out a little bit of the difference between the FDA and other tobacco control national government organizations as we know them. There is a difference. FDA is a regulatory agency. Now that's a concept that's relatively new to those of us in tobacco control. We're learning more, but we need to learn even more and have a better understanding. FDA does have a public health role. That role traditionally has been dealing with issues like food and drug, medical devices, and cosmetics. Now, while tobacco is not a health-related issue per se, the FDA was determined by Congress to be the most appropriate agency to regulate tobacco, and that's where it now sits. And FDA does not like, for example, CDC determined policy. And so in terms of CDC's efforts, for example, to encourage smoke-free policies, tobacco regulation is defined in a very different way. Tobacco regulation is now part of tobacco control, but it's a much bigger picture here. Now there is one other final point that's very, very different, and that is the tobacco industry is viewed as a stakeholder by the FDA, just like we're viewed as stakeholders. So you have to keep that in mind. They have to listen to these two different diametrically opposed sides. Okay, let's first explore a few of the regulatory key terms. Now I'm not going to go through every single one of these for the sake of time. However, I think it's important that you review them, and one of the things I've asked Gretchen to do is, Carla's daughter, is to hand out a handout which lays out the slide presentation here, so hopefully you have a copy of this with that. Keep in mind that legislation generally sets out an outline, or simply the bottom line, of what Congress wants to accomplish. It's up to the federal regulatory agencies to interpret and define how the law should be actually carried out and how it's to be enforced. This is done by regulations. Final regulations do carry the full force of the law. As you can see, there's lots of acronyms here. ANPRM, ANPRM, and they indicate different parts of the process in which different things are taking place here. There's also some agencies that are involved. I'm going to speak more to them. The Office of Management and Budget and OIRA. How many of you are familiar with OIRA? Raise hands. Just a few. That is a subdivision of OMB, and I'll get into that. Okay, here's the fun part. Let's review the generic rulemaking process. Now, let's remember that federal agencies implement laws passed by Congress through the process. And what happens, however, is that final regulations carry the force of law, but it's the process of getting to the final rule that can be quite long. It's not unusual for this to pass through. You know, Congress passes the law, as you see in the red box there, to the blue box, which can mean even a little bit more action, which may take you back to the first part. But this can take a long, long time, and particularly if it's a controversial or it's a large issue, it can take even more time. So you start off with Congress passing the law, the agency writes an implementation regulation, it goes to OMB for review, there's a notice of proposed rulemaking, and this is the traditional, it can vary a little bit. There's a 90-day comment period. The agency, once they get those comments, they analyze the comments and they may reissue the regulation. Then it goes back to OMB again. And then, if everything goes well, it's a final rule, but Congress can change it if needed. Because the rules, the regulation can be challenged in court. The courts may rule, for example, that if there's a problem with the regulation, then the agency may have to work on it some more. Or, if by the time the rule has gotten through the process, the political landscape may have changed. So, it is possible that Congress may change its mind about a particular law and its implementation, or they may realize that the way the law is written, or the regulation is written, does not allow for the agency to really implement the law in the way it was intended. So, it may go through the process all over again. Here's another way of breaking it down into four basic stages called the prelude, the drafting, the proposal, and the final rule. Now, public comment is very, very important, and I will say that over and over again during this presentation, because what it does is it helps to build the record for the agency in which it will base its regulations or any change to the regulations. The agencies are required to hold comment periods and to take comments into consideration. Yes, they do read them. They just don't go in a pile. They're read. They're analyzed. They're required to have comment periods. And for something as controversial as tobacco regulation, controversial in the sense that it probably would be challenged, it's important to have a strong foundation of why the agency is implementing the law or writing the rule that the way that they are. Therefore, it's critical that the FDA hear from you. It's critical that they get input in terms of scientific and technical comments. They want to hear comments from the community at large. They want to know what is going on the ground with respect to the issue itself. And this is where all of you come in. You'll see here there really are two major points in which the public can get involved during the rulemaking process. One is called the pre-rulemaking process, that's the prelude on the left-hand side, and it's really the point where the public can get the most involved. It's at the beginning. Once the drafting process begins, the public only has one chance to comment when the proposed rule has been issued, and that's when it gets over to the purple box under proposal. You'll notice under the final rule that there is a bullet labeled potential litigation. As I said before, rules can be challenged in court. A rule can be challenged on two different grounds, and this is where we get a little legalese here. And I am not a lawyer, so bear with me. Statutorily, saying that the agency, for example, did not follow the proper procedures or take appropriate information into account. or, secondly, it could be challenged, constitutionality, saying that the rule violates the Constitution in some way. Now, a note about legal challenges to rules. When a rule is challenged, the courts give deference to the agency's experience and limits to the review as to what is in the rulemaking record. So once again, we go back to the record and the strength of the record. Generally, a rulemaking decision can only be reversed if it is ruled to be arbitrary and capricious or an abuse of discretion by the agency. Now, these standards are relatively subjective from what I understand. So it is why, as I've been saying, it's important to have public participation and to make sure that the record is as strong as possible. Another thing, once the record is closed, all of these comment periods have deadlines. You cannot supplement the record. The deadlines laid out in the Federal Register are drop-dead deadlines. This plays a strong role when regulations are challenged in court. It's impossible to get information to FDA on time when those court cases begin. So you got to do it early on. You can't wait till the last minute. And it's important so that they can point to the record and have a strong foundation to stand on. Okay. Do you know this gentleman? How many know this gentleman? Okay, I see a few of the legalese people in the room who do know who they are. Are they from Washington, D.C.? Locos. This is what we call the most powerful person in Washington you probably have never heard of before. Cass Sunstein. He is the director of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, OIRA, I mentioned earlier. And all regulatory activity for the legislative branch goes through and must be approved by OIRA. It's a highly political process, point number one. Basically, all regulations will go through the OMB, except for a few independent agencies, such as the FTC, the FCC, the Federal Reserve. But they go through approval, as I showed in the earlier slide, to the OMB, and specifically through this office. It's an arm of the White House staff. It produces, as you know, the OMB produces the federal budget, manages the federal accounting, contracting, and regulations, and it's very much a part of the White House decision making. Now, this means that often at times, especially for high profile cases, people like the FDA Center for Tobacco Products Director, Dr. Dayton, and also Dr. Hamburg, and also, and even, Secretary of Health and Human Services, Sybilis, are not always the ones making the final decisions. Now, they play a large role in the process, but the buck does not necessarily stop with them. See, sorry about that. Something else to be aware of. There are what's called sub-regulatory tools that an agency has called guidances. Guidances do not carry the force of the law, but they are a good tool because they're a description of an agency's thinking on a particular topic. So from time to time, they will issue these. They help the industry know how the agency is expecting the industry to follow a particular law or rule. Sometimes guidances are precursors to regulation, and they can be an indicator of how an agency is thinking about a particular issue. Usually, the good thing about guidances is usually when they come out, there's usually a call that accompanies them for public comment. So it's another opportunity to participate and get your voice known. Okay, so we know the importance now of speaking up and saying what you need to say. What's the best way to go about doing that? So we're going to talk now a little bit about what needs to be included. Now, comments should be as fact-based as possible. Now, this doesn't mean that they have to be the peer-reviewed scientific threshold that many of us are familiar with. However, you got to back up your opinion with facts. And sometimes an agency will tell us what they're interested in. They may be only interested in a particular aspect for comment. Sometimes they issue calls for comments many, many times. And I'll talk a little bit more about that with menthol, for example. The generally scientific information that they do like to see, however, includes these things I have listed here in terms of population surveys, tobacco industry documents, epidemiological studies, economic studies, psychological studies, qualitative research, clinical studies, consumer-based studies, and system science management. All of these to point to and help FDA determine the effect of a proposed regulation as it relates to tobacco use uptake and tobacco product cessation and overall use or population on population health. Sometimes, however, they also want to go beyond the scientific information, and they're looking for information from the field. So on this slide, you'll see other things that they may call for, including documentation of marketing in particular communities, internet research, consumer questions, and other surveys. Okay, now that we've covered the basics of the regulatory process, I want to suggest that as you think about putting in comments, that you don't have to cover and comment on every single regulatory agency. Each of our organizations usually has specific experience. Sometimes it's a little more generic, but you don't have to comment on everything that they put out. But what's really relevant, and if you feel that there is an area where you have research, or there's an area where your particular organization has a strong opinion, pro or con, that is the time to speak up. Now, there is another way to do it, and you can do it on your own as an organization, or you can do it as an individual. Individual comments are also welcome. Sometimes it also is good to consider joint comments. In other words, pairing up with other organizations to put comments in. These are comments that are submitted in cooperation with other groups. And what's good is that it kind of gives an indicator that you have more than just one organization voicing a particular opinion. But when you do this, keep in mind it requires a lot of advanced planning and a lot of advanced coordination. And not every organization is going to go down the road with every single thing that they agree to. Usually there's a little bit of discrepancy there, and in that case it may be best to issue your own comments. But there definitely can be value from coming together when it makes a lot of sense. And once again, just my little pitch here in terms of the importance of sending in your comments by the deadline. The lower one is just a representation on one of our comments that we put together with a number of organizations. So when a regulatory agency like FDA sees this, they're going to say, hey, there's a whole lot of folks who really are in agreement with this particular comment at this particular time. Okay, real quick, the one thing about warning labels in terms of that was one of the, let's see, I think I'm a little off here. Here's a page of what part of, I skipped a slide. Thank you. We're going to take a look at what Legacy did in terms of warning labels, for example. This really followed a traditional statutory rulemaking process. It was defined by the statute that the FDA issue rules by that particular date. So the proposed rule came out in November of 2010. The final rule was issued this past June. It will go into effect in September. And as we can expect, the FDA has already been sued by the tobacco industry. Just taking a look at one of their pages from the Federal Register, it lays out a couple of things to note, which I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but it will tell you when to do, who to send it to, in particular instructions, you know, what you have to, when you put together your written comments, what you have to include. It might be a DUNS number, it might be a couple of other things, and who the contact person is. Caveat in terms of contacting FDA employees or any regulatory agency employee is that they are usually extremely limited in what they can talk about. They can only talk about the process itself. They even created a website dedicated to an overview of the cigarette warning graphic labels. You can see the images within. If you go further into that page, they give you more information about their authority, what the study that they commissioned on the FDA warning labels. They had an outside study. And so that's also information that's important. And more important, it's also important way for the agency to show that it's following all the rules in terms of transparency. Here's another page excerpted from the final rule, and you'll see that the FDA is addressing the comments received on the existing warnings. Now, they received over 1,700 comments, and they did review every single one. And using legacy as an example, we have specialized expertise in marketing, so our comments really focused on that particular aspect. This was one that we generally submitted the comments by ourselves as opposed to in collaboration with other organizations. And that wasn't a bad thing. It's just that we had a different type of expertise than some of the other general comments that other organizations were going to be submitting. And as I said earlier, and as we suspected all the time, there has been a lawsuit that has been filed regarding the warning labels. And several groups, including Legacy, have filed amicus briefs on behalf of the FDA supporting the warning labels. Second case point, I'm going to wind this up real quick before Cynthia kicks me off here. Mentholated cigarettes is another case study that highlights the complexity and length of the process itself. Now, this was not a statutory requirement per se. FDA is not required by statute to do anything on menthol. However, they were required to have their tobacco products scientific advisory committee study the issue. So over the past year, 2 years actually almost, there have been many, many opportunities for public comment. Legacy actually submitted at 7 separate occasions on the menthol issue. We called for a total ban on menthol. We still do. And this is not over yet, because there is now a peer review committee that is looking at the menthol issue, and it's still going on. This is still in its pre-phase, its prelude phase. It has not gotten to the final rulemaking yet. And this is the latest that we have. They have it in peer review. We're waiting for the comments to come out of the peer review. There'll be a 30-day, another opportunity for public comment. And we suspect that there's going to be a lot of opportunities because of where it stands at the moment. So to conclude, I hope that these examples give you an idea of some of the basics of regulation. And I can't stress enough how important it is for as tobacco control advocates to really let our voice be heard in all different levels. I mean, there's so much that we're dealing with. I mean, Carla pointed that out. Cynthia's been talking about this. This is our new landscape. This is what we need to deal with, and we need to participate in the process. So I encourage you to do so, and I thank you for your time.